For this Brewlook episode, we speak with Steve Leeson of Seelands Grove Brewing Company in Seelands Grove, Pennsylvania. Steve and his wife Heather, who has a cameo later in the interview, founded Seelands Grove in 1996 at the peak of the second wave of the American craft beer movement. They had an idea for a community-driven brew pub and had the lucky fortune of being able to locate on the ground floor of a colonial-era former governor's mansion that Heather's parents own. We were really impressed with Steve's deft skill in pulling off a broad range of styles and his willingness to embrace organic practices. If you've never visited, set your GPS. And with that, we give you Steve Leeson.
We've had these beers before, if you want the big glass.
I did a wild beer back like 17, 18 years ago, and that's homebrewing. And I went to the regionals, where we sent into the GABs. Way back then?
Back then?
PDO and Brett.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that they...
And I did, it was a...
Was it like a special, like, you had to like custom order it or something, or were they selling it, you know, just out of the regular?
I swear they just sent me.
Yeah.
But no one knew anything, and I don't even know how I did it. It was good.
Yeah.
But no, even I couldn't back then. You know, back then, you know, your first days, you're like, oh my god.
Yeah. This is an oh my god beer. Okay.
What is this? This is a sour pumpkin beer in homage to John Fahey, the American Primitive guitar player.
Okay.
So it's got rosemary. He spent a year with bourbon. It's got a rosemary and honeysuckle in it. Sort of aggressive, lactic.
Yeah, lots of lactic, Brett. Wow. Nice. I don't know if I'm getting rosemary.
Yeah, well, I mean,
some honeysuckle?
Yeah, some honeysuckle. And it was sort of an American primitive beer, so I sort of was like, oh, well,
yeah, this is colonial beer. It's a pumpkin?
Yeah, yeah. So it's a pumpkin beer without pumpkin spices, and sort of a looking back to this colonial brewing.
You use that for sugar.
Exactly. For fermentables, you don't get a whole lot of fermentables out. Even when you roast it, you get
When this was young, it really had like a vegetable, you know, like somebody's, you know, making mashed sweet potatoes or mashed squash sort of flavor to it.
That's cool.
But now, I mean, it's really almost gone completely.
Yeah, so it's a large amount of pumpkin, and you know, it's got, you know, it's just one of these sort of, it's like full grain experience. So I've got some, you know, looking at possible this sort of farmhouse tradition stuff. So it's got oats in it, it's got some rye in it, you know, it's got wheat. I didn't have any grits on hand, so I was throwing some corn sugar, you know, just to say it has some corn in it or whatever.
That's good.
Speaking of grits, do you add like flake corn or to the cream ale? It was really nice.
I've done both. Added flaked, and I also just add corn sugar.
Now
I think I'm splitting it half and half.
Yeah, I was just saying, because to me it had some corn flavor, but it wasn't.
Good.
And some of them I had really bad sort of corny, you know, in a not complimentary way.
I think at one point mine was too corny.
Yeah.
So.
Back down into a little more corn sugar and.
I was using just flaked back then, and
we'll
go to corn sugar, and then I think I started splitting it.
Yeah.
And what was the idea behind doing a cream ale? Like, were you just, like, as a nod to that sort of, that tradition, or what was it, like,
it was
an inside joke?
Yeah, it was twofold. Hey, what are you saying?
It's a joke?
Yeah, I mean, Heather's grandfather. Jenny Cream.
Yeah. That's gonna say, you know, upstate people, Jenny Cream. Mm-hmm.
Died at the blue and white Penn State game.
Wow.
Two Jenny Pounders in his pocket. You guys were taking him out on the ambulance stretcher. So there was kind of he was always drinking Jenny Cream Ale. So I think
that was
part of like, oh, we gotta make a cream ale for Paw Paw, you know, that kind of thing. But then when you research it too, it is interesting. It was at least from my understanding when I did research on it, you know, it was something to compete against the German immigrant pilgrims.
Yeah, right. And a brew pub, every brew pub has to have that sort of entry, you know, hey, what do you got? You know, this is my first time in a brew pub.
Right,
beer.
But it's going to be a blonde.
Yeah, I think that's a great beer to have that's just like, hey, you know, oh, you don't have Budweiser, what do you have, you know?
Female.
Cool. And was that like right from the beginning? That was one of the
first
never
six.
Gotten off the beer board?
Yep. I mean, I've run out sometimes.
Right,
I've never rotated it off.
Yeah.
And what other beers like have stuck around the whole time? Like,
let's see. What are the first six? Cream, Scottish, Porter, Stout. And then might have had a Belgian right off.
And the Porter came in later on.
The Baltic.
No, you said
the Porter was the original.
Oh, that was one of the
right.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
The White Horse.
Yeah, right. It's off right now.
Yeah. I had that. I was up here. I mean, we're from D.C. I was up here maybe 3 years ago and had the Porter, and it was around this time of year, I think. It's really good.
Thanks.
Sad it was not.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so.
But I assume you tweaked a lot of the recipes sort of over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you learn.
Yeah.
I thought, well, in 5 years I'll finally have it down.
Yeah.
And then at 5 years I was like, no,
I'm
10
getting
years.
Close.
10 years, you know, that was unrealistic. 10 years I'll have it down. Well, we're coming up on 15 years.
Yeah. Have you changed like what you were you starting with before going for an English and then said, well, I'm getting close. Oh, you know, American's really what I want, and sort of veered it off.
You've
had the same idea and been.
It's been all over. I think
yeah.
partly because of the laws in the PA. You know, I couldn't serve other beers, especially when we first opened.
Yeah.
Like, now you can buy a liquor license, but at the time, you know, you had to have a broad spectrum because that's all you
yeah.
had. And I like all kinds of beer, so it was
yeah.
perfect for me. I mean, in New Belgium, you know, 80-something% of the time I'm brewing Fat Tire.
Yeah.
And you know, I landed the triple brew.
And even then, you're not coming up with the recipe.
Right.
You're just getting to put a different grain bill in there. And
yeah.
Different yeast.
So for me, I mean, I like the creative process.
Yeah.
I like discovering new beers. And, you know, the Porter probably, I didn't change it for 7 years, and then I just, for 1 year, I just played with it.
Yeah.
Until it moved to what I feel to the next level. And I'll do that. I just won't touch a beer for years. But, unless I... You know, I've certainly made beers in the beginning, and I'm like, this isn't quite right. You keep tweaking it,
Yeah.
Well, are you doing like pilot brewing at all, or is it like if you're thinking of a new recipe, it's always going to be
yeah, at this
to
point.
Them.
I mean, it was nice when I had my 3-barrel system.
Yeah.
Because
right.
6 kegs.
Yeah.
You know, you went
yeah.
through pretty quick, and I did a crap load of brewing. I mean, I was
yeah.
brewing all the time up there. And to the point where it wasn't fun, I was just trying to keep up,
right,
keep
right.
my head above water. And then I realized, you know, I'm not experimenting, I'm not having fun, I'm not keeping up.
Yeah.
So it was worth that investment. You were like, this is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
And for
and
me...
how many years in was that stout?
I think year 7, I think we came out here.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. You've got about 10 beers on tap, I think, today. I mean, it's great to go into a brew pub and be able to try that many different things. And
yeah, 10 or 11.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, there wasn't a single one where we were like, oh, you know, get that off of here. You know,
I drink them all. So.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a step back though and just talk about sort of the ethos and the idea behind like Sullivan's Grove. Like you know, you and Heather must have had this idea going into it and thought it out. And
yeah, I mean, we were living in a fisherman shack in Maine, basically. With a well and a wood stove.
Yeah.
And working at an inn, I was like the assistant manager, she was a nanny. And I had always, you know, I had homebrewed for a long time, but when she came along, we started all grain, this joint malt, which was the club back then. I don't know if it's still in existence, but Maine Ale and Lager Tasters.
Probably.
And
where in Maine were you?
This is near Bath.
Okay.
It's central on the coast, it's about central Maine. And we joined the club, and then we started entering competitions and winning competitions, and, you know.
And right from the beginning, you both had this sort of shared passion.
Well, we both had
art. Beer,
she's an art minor, and I have an art major, so I think there's that creative,
yeah.
you know, with your painting or your cooking, or, you know, it's like a cooking process.
Yeah.
I started college, because, you know, we wanted
you
beer.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine started, and I started doing it. Just cans back then,
yeah.
you know.
That's how I, that's exactly the way I started in college.
And this was with hardly any books. I mean,
yeah.
you know, back then it was nothing. But then we got more interested when Heather and I were up in Maine. We started Powerful Mash and Full Grain. And you know, one day we were both like, you know, we're not really doing anything. we didn't have any responsibilities.
Yeah.
We just got married.
And,
we
it was a seasonal sort of position.
Right. Yeah, 6 months on, and then, you know, Buddhist monastery for a few months and to stay warm and things like that. But I didn't care. I mean, I lived, you know, there was my TV up there. That's what I was watching. See if I could get Star Trek in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I didn't have much. And I didn't, it was fine. We thought, yeah, we could do this. Let's move out west to where all the homebrewing is in Colorado and maybe try to get a job and work on a business plan.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, and we did that, which is amazing because you never really do anything. We went out there, we fell into a job in New Belgium on the bottling line. I worked our way up. We worked on a business plan. And then it was a matter of, you know, coming back to Maine or coming back to Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania had no market.
Yeah.
There were four brew pubs when we opened.
Wow. And there was probably four within, you know, 20 miles or something.
Well,
like
there's Dock Street, Notting Head, that's Philly.
Yeah.
And then there was Stiles, and then there was Penn Brewing. And then she had a lot of family here. She had two grandmothers. I had all my grandmothers who passed away, so we had good reason to come back here.
Yeah.
So we'd spent about a year trying to find a spot and open it up.
Was there anything about this particular area that really said, you know, it needs a brew pub, or was it just this building? It's a great old building.
Yeah.
Was the history,
That's the third governor of Pennsylvania's house, his retirement house. And he was the only three-term governor. Mm-hmm. Her parents owned it.
Wow.
So
who rented downstairs at the time.
Yeah.
And her dad's quite a businessman. He stuck it to us early. Which was fine because he knew we needed incentive. He never mixed family with business. We paid the rent. And
you had some homebrew recipes. And,
And, you know, I had the Belgium experience. And that was great because at the time the Belgium was growing, we were just putting together stuff. Jeff was an electrical engineer. You know, we learned how to just rig up things. And that was valuable for me because other than I didn't have the money to go buy a system. You know, we went to Crensman Steel and bought, you know, a stainless steel tank and then took it to a guy and he fabricated some stuff on it. You know, we really built it.
Yeah.
It was a Frankenstein system. It really was.
Yeah. And that was, so that was the original three barrel.
Yeah. So just a couple, two pumps and a mash tun and a kettle. I mean, it was so simple. And we just racked a lot of, we started filtering the first few months and then I just dropped that right off.
Yeah.
Which is fine because we keep the lights low here.
I mean, it's amazing like how clear that Pilsner is. I mean, it's a beautiful beer.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. The organics I've had, you know, that's the one hoppy organic beer that I like.
Yeah, we definitely want to talk about that. You know, you have, I think tonight you have
two organics.
Three organic.
The stout, the
Baltic, and the pills. Right. And so you're sourcing for New Zealand for hops. And
I got German hops for the Pilsner.
Oh, right, it's malt.
Yep. And then,
the other two are just pretty light on the hops, I assume.
What's that?
The Baltic port and the stout, I assume, are pretty light on the hops.
Right. And I think I use Spalding in the Baltic. I mean, it's just for, you don't even taste it.
Yeah.
It's super malty.
Right, yeah. But you've been happy with sort of, did you work through a few different malts before you found what you wanted?
I just went to Breeze, and I've had good luck with them all.
Yeah. And it's been consistent?
Yep.
Yeah. Your efficiency hasn't gone up and down?
The only, I don't really have the stout down yet. That was the last to go. And your roasted barley seems really light.
That's what we were going to say. I mean, it's four steps. The color's very light, but it has a really nice roast to it. I mean, if you were closing your eyes, it tastes exactly like a step. But when you look at it, I mean, it's, you know, more like a...
nutty brown kind of a...
Used to be jet black.
Yeah.
And I took the same recipe and went to Breese Organics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be a little lighter, but it was a lot lighter than I thought.
Yeah.
And it's still too light. So I have to...
But speaking to, still to like, where are you, when it comes to styles, like, are you concerned that your stout isn't going to be hitting the lagavulin bond that you were looking for? Or, like, what's your approach to styles?
I'm pretty traditional, but I'm not anal traditional. I mean, I won't sit down and calculate everything.
Yeah.
I know when something's 20%.
Yeah. After 15 years, you have a feel for things.
And I don't have time to sit down for every, you know, you get these malt analysis and then send it.
Yeah.
Who has time to read those? You know, I got diapers to change. That's part of being really small.
Yeah.
You try to depend on good sources for your malt, your hops, and your yeast, and you depend on them.
And have you stuck with those relationships for years? Or
I don't know.
You, yeah.
I mean, like, you know, what was it? They went out of business. The Belgian, they did the Caraviana, the original. Wolf, the call.
Oh, DeWolf's Coning, or, yeah.
Yeah, Colson's. I can't remember.
I don't know how it
is. They started, really messing up the mall. He was coming in smoky.
Ooh.
I caught it right away because I'm the only one, you know, opening up the bags and pitching them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know some other people, it took them two or three brews to figure out what was going on because, you know, you have an assistant brewer and it's 5 a.m. So they don't care, they're just throwing bags in. But I never even brewed with it. I could tell right away it was smoky. And then they just kept having trouble and, you know, you ditched them. And I used to use Crisp and, you know, I went to some other, sometimes you change companies just because the people who provide, you know, you don't want to buy from five different
companies.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and deal with five different deliveries and deal with five different orders. And
right. So you try to find a compromise. And there's a bunch of good companies out there.
Yeah. But I mean, and that's one of the fun things about being homebrewers is we get to just, you know, buy 10 pounds of this or 2 pounds of that. Or
yeah, I mean, I'll take it into the malt room. It's pretty packed right now. But, you know, I use Thomas Fawcett Optic now. I use Barista Organics, which I like using American malts.
Yeah.
I'm using their Pilsner malt now more and more. I'm pretty happy with that. It's very light. It's not. It's very neutral.
Yeah.
Well, how far would you like to go with the organic thing? Would you like to have more and more of your beers go 100%, or like I guess you're limited with what hops you can and sort of specialty malts.
I mean, I did try
like
some.
That.
I had some New Zealand hops, some American. Organic hops are just terrible. I mean, it's awful beer.
Yeah. That's what we keep hearing from brewers is there's a consistency issue, you know, and it's just, I'm not quite there yet.
I mean, if you have a good person, they'll tell you, but like, you don't want to use this hop.
Yeah.
I bought my organic hops from Seven Bridges, and they're real nice. They
they sell the homebrewers.
So they know what's up.
They're honest with you if something's not.
Yeah,
you know,
they're not trying to dump something off on me. So, that's good.
Yeah.
But I think my first thing was to I want to have one organic beer on all the time, and I did that.
Yeah.
And then I had some guest spots, and then like the stout is funny. The stout had 15%. Like the oatmeal was organic when we first opened because I was at the Amish store or something.
Yeah.
I found a bag.
It just happened. Right.
I had a source for organic. You know, we did that for years, and then I got to the point. Then I finally looked at it a couple years ago, and I'm like, why are we still doing this? Why don't we just go all organic?
Yeah.
It was so outdated.
Yeah.
Because I was already doing other organic beers. So then I just converted the whole thing. I'm still playing with it.
Yeah. So do you think you'll just go with a higher percentage of roasted barley, or are there other organic roasted barley providers that might be darker?
Well, for now, I'm just upping the percentage.
Yeah.
There are. I know Gambrinus and some other German doing stuff, but.
Yeah.
I like the flavor. It's very chocolatey.
Yeah.
Oh,
coffee notes.
Yeah, wonderful roast.
I think it could have more depth if I continue to bump it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep playing with that. You know, you want to change one thing at a time.
Let's talk about recipe formulation with that. Yeah, like how when you're, it comes to tweaking, so you're methodic, you're going
to
change one thing.
Well,
I try. Time. Sometimes you can't help yourself, right?
Right. The art thing there.
And how often are you rolling out new beers? Are you constantly, do you have a deep notebook full of ideas, or is it just something comes to you when you're sleeping, or how's that?
Note, he pointed to his head.
Yeah, it's a messy notebook. I guess it's very organic. It just, I get to
it
a point
happens.
Where I'm like, I have enough, I guess I do think about, I want to do some sour beers. I think about it for probably 10 years, and I'm getting close to the point where I probably could get some barrels and stuff. I've always liked the Flemish brown ales. Those are amazing. And I'll do some bourbon. I mean, everyone's doing it right now, but it does, if it's done right, it can be quite wonderful.
Yeah.
I have some, my customers bought me for Christmas a bourbon barrel. So I had to put something in it, and that was fun.
Yeah.
So I did that. But
What'd you put in there?
I think I put the Baltic Porter in
it. Did it look a good match?
And a quick dip, or did it?
Not long enough.
Yeah.
Not long enough. I thought it was, but then after I actually kegged it all and put it on the pad, I could have gone a little longer with it. So that's just the learning curve. But yeah, I did the white beer this year, which came out really nice the second time. Very happy with it. So that was new. I did a blonde. That was new. So every once in a while, sure.
We had the peach beer. Was that the first time you've done that one? Or is that something? Really big peach character. I mean, that's one of the things that homebrewers often say.
Ridiculous amount of peach.
Yeah, but it's not. I picked up a Lindeman's.
Compared to that.
Sure.
After you sip the Lindeman's, then mine doesn't taste like it has peach.
Yeah, that's a difference.
I mean,
that's a different beast entirely. Let's talk about that beer.
That's one of the things homebrewers are constantly say is, peaches don't really work in beer. You can't get much peach flavor. And was there some secret, or you just put a bunch of peaches in there?
Lots of peaches. And then, I use some syrup and I use some fruit.
Yeah.
So I use, and if you look at Leafman, this is one of my early favorites. It says right on it, this is a fortification clue. Belgian ale flavored with fresh raspberries and raspberry juice.
Yeah.
And I read that one day and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So I actually started combining using juice and fresh raspberries.
Yeah.
Juice is usually condensed.
Yeah.
So it boosts up the food.
Yeah.
But,
and I assume you just add it to.
It's too bad. It was great.
Well, yeah, Leafman's is
the best.
Yeah.
And they were always crooked. I don't know if the guys were drunk when they put it on.
And do you just add fruit to the secondary after primary fermentation? After you dump the yeast after primary fermentation? Or?
Yeah, it's a blend.
Yeah, you don't want all the blow off and lose all
your
fruit.
I've done a little bit of both. Yeah, it can ferment out until there's enough alcohol.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
So do you add it cold so that the yeast really isn't that active and still has
some
of those sugars? Mm-hmm.
And what strain do you go with on? Do you like DuPont or do you remember?
I have a Belgian, my house strain,
okay.
Which is a blend. And I've also used an English base
for
fruitier.
Beers. Yeah.
For the Creek and the Framois, sometimes I'll use just the English.
Yeah.
It's just nice and fruity. It almost tastes like it has fruit in it to start with. That seems to work fine.
Cool.
And so, how many yeast are you working with in-house? And
I try not to do more than two at a time.
Okay. And are you doing liquid yeast? Or have you done much with dry yeast?
I haven't
yeast
done anything with dry yeast.
Okay.
That seems to be, it's amazing how many brewers we talk to are doing dry yeast.
That's what I've been hearing.
Yeah.
And I had time to explore it.
So Terry pitched about 1,000 grams of USO5, and he said it takes off in 12 hours.
Wow.
That would, we were doing his, just doing a simple wheat beer yesterday.
People are really into it.
Yeah.
So, I just haven't done it.
Yeah.
I'm into my routine, so.
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty much liquid yeast, too. I mean, that's just, I'm comfortable with it. I like the strains,
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it's worth risking 5 gallons, let alone. Are you doing? You said, seven barrels now? 5 barrels?
Yeah, it's 7 barrels.
7 barrels? I mean, that's a lot of beer to play with. Trying something new.
It is. I mean, now after 14 years here, a couple years in Belgium, I'm more confident.
Yeah.
But yeah, it hurts to dump a couple hundred gallons of beer down the drain, you know, you just sit there with a triple and watch it go down. It's terrible. Fortunately, I haven't done a lot of that.
Well, you brought the triple, and that just an amazing, just an amazing, and a huge amount. That had just wonderful fruit. Had like a peachy kind of just.
That
wonderful.
Right now is the Bastogne ale.
Hmm.
The Belgian Bastogne. I'm blending a little West Malt to finish it.
Yeah.
Because it drags, and the West Malt seems to be pretty killer.
Yeah.
So that's just.
I love that strain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to try it again from. Difference from East Company to East Company.
Yeah.
I'd like to try BSI's version of it because they're really into it. I used it for years, and I finally got rid of it. I was never as happy as when I cultivated out of the bottle. But you know, I use the ESB strain from White Labs.
Mm-hmm.
I'll buy it from BSI or someone else, and it's not the same. It just isn't. It doesn't flocculate the same.
Yeah.
And it doesn't taste quite the same. It's interesting. It's,
yeah.
You know,
there isn't one great yeast lab. It's different strains from different places, and you know.
Like I went to the old Dan McConnell yeast strain from my Hefeweizen. They just won't finish.
Yeah.
They just flat out won't finish. And I'll talk to the yeast people, and they're like, "We don't know what you're talking about." And I'll try them a couple times.
Your problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they honestly don't have problems with it. I think yeast just. Like certain breweries.
Yeah. Certain fermenter designs and certain temperatures and certain
water.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
And do you have rules about how many generations you can take things and like how
typically.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that can just be
like my house strain, I try to go less than 8 generations.
Yeah.
And I'll try to do my English beers early on because it's an English yeast strain. Because that as a
all the esters are still
it'll get cleaner. Towards the end I'll do IPA or cream ale. Because it just, you know, it cleans up. It becomes more lager-like. So I'll try to pace things. If I want to make a really good English pale ale or something, I won't use 6th generation.
Yeah.
It's just because I'm not taught cropping.
Yeah.
I've tried top cropping, but, you know.
Conicals is not,
And I even had an open fermenter for a while. Even that's hard.
Yeah.
You know, get
and
all
keep
this foam and...
So yeah, what happened with that? So you tried it and just, it wasn't for you? Or
I had some of the best beers I ever made on it, and I had 2 infected beers.
It's a wonderful romance to it, right? But
it wasn't really designed for that. It was a milk fermenter. It had a plate on the bottom. It didn't cool properly. I made a great Irish stout with it. Mm-hmm. I would sit next to Guinness, the old Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
Was just really happy with it.
Yeah.
But, it was finicky, and it, you have to design a space for it. Like, Omegang has a space for it. Ankerstein has a space. And I had originally even thought of screening off. I had set this up to screen off an area and stuff. It's just not practical for me.
For
I was able to put
operation.
2 fermenters in the place of one that was the other. Those came from, have you been down the creek yet?
No, we had, they had the guest tap up at Bullfrog.
Oh, okay.
So that's the first I'd heard of them, so it was.
It's a cool place.
Yeah, it was.
And they had bought a whole system from Canada, some Canadian brew pub. You know, you buy it and you have, I have too many tanks.
Yeah.
You know, bulk buy.
Proof
yeah, sure.
So Tim called me up and they were the perfect size. And I just bought them from
Canada.
they're very. It has a little slope, like maybe a 40-degree slope. You can't see it; it's all boxed.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not much of a slope. Hi.
Hi. This must be a guy.
Yeah. I can't
Mike?
Even.
And Nathan.
Sorry about all the.
Whoever.
Oh.
Nothing to apologize for. We're here and we're having a great conversation. So yeah. Can you join us for a while, or are you sort of, I'm sure you're busy with
that. I have 2 4-year-olds in the car, and kind of keep an eye on
them.
Did y'all ever consider bottling? Is that the sort of the...
No.
No, just for because of quality control issues and all that stuff? Or
well, it's a big step to do it.
Yeah.
I mean...
So much can go wrong.
We did that in New Belgium. It's a... You have to be big enough to do it, I think, to do it successfully and really make money.
Well, do you think a lab is necessary to some degree? It's just for...
I think once you start bottling, shipping stuff out.
Yeah.
And you're handing it over to, an unknown... Shipping stuff out, when it leaves the door, it might be great.
But how about just releases here on premise? You know, you do a special beer or something like that, and just.
Well, I guess the bottom line is we're selling everything comfortably now.
Where's the point? Where's
so it's
point
something that you all have thought through
and
just need and it just kind
of
gonna work out or whatever. Yeah.
You don't really need to.
We have played with the idea. 15
minutes
yeah.
or something. No, I mean, the first time I came in here, the first time maybe 3 years ago, and I had to wait. I came in a Saturday afternoon at 2 or 3. I had to wait an hour for a table. It was just, I don't know if something was going on that day, but it was crazy.
It could have been some, homecoming interference.
Yeah.
You can't always tell.
Yeah.
The last Sunday.
It depends on
nuts.
Well, how many seats are there?
It's only 45.
Oh, that's tiny.
Seats
yeah.
In the eighth
floor. Yeah.
I think you had maybe it was the last day of the Scottish Ale from the previous year, and it kicked. We were filling growlers. Wow, I was heading for the table and it kicked right before I sat down.
And can that be an issue? you guys have all this amazing beer on, so people will linger. They have their sandwich and then they're sit at their table for 2 or 3 hours, just sort of drinking I can imagine that. Turnover could be, turning around tables.
Yeah, we don't kick people out.
Yeah.
That's the problem. When you do take reservations,
yeah.
Sometimes you have to kick people out.
Yeah.
We're a pub and we've tried to focus on that.
Because there's only how many seats at the bar? Just
8?
Yeah.
So you have to know what you are to a point.
Are you happy with the way this place and the setup has worked? Is there anything you have changed from, if you could go back 15 years ago and say, I should have started with that 7-barrel system? Or,
yep, that's the first thing. Yeah, undersizing.
Yeah.
Over. You either get a lot of employees or you oversize your system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely would have started bigger.
And I think over the whole restaurant side of it.
So with tasting room, just a small sort of bar tasting room kind of thing without food.
I think
he's
still doing the same thing.
Just
has somebody else actually manage the whole operation. Yeah.
He thought about that early on.
Yeah, but we just never found the right person at the right time.
Because we didn't think, we're big. Have you ever been to Ray McNeil's? The pub in Brattleboro?
Mm-hmm.
McNeil's,
yeah.
I've had their beers.
Yeah, they bottle, right?
Yeah.
That was kind of an early, they didn't serve much food. It was mostly a pub. And we thought it would be like that.
Yeah.
But
just a big pot of something you could sort of do without.
We moved to an area and people wanted food.
Yeah.
They wanted food, and in order to come in, we had to have it. And even when we started serving food, probably 6 or 7 years later, people still they say, I haven't been down. You guys don't have any food down there, do you? people get that in their heads.
Yeah.
It's that first impression. And, that kind of hurts you for a while.
Yeah.
It does. And we never really were set up for a real kitchen. We don't have a hood. We don't have a grill. All we can really make is sandwiches and a few specials.
Yeah.
So we tried to make them well.
Yeah.
With what we have, do a good job.
Yeah, I think you really have. It's one of those things where, if you're under that sort of stress of, we can't just do the standard stuff,
right.
You almost have to make things a little more interesting.
Yeah.
And it's almost that sort of Italian enoteca kind of thing where it's a wine bar, and we do press sandwiches and we do a few things, but the focus really is going to be things that are complement the beverage, you know,
right.
And just something that'll be, you know, just marry up well, you know,
yeah.
And we're not going to get too fussy about preparations and every other thing, you know.
Sorry.
I didn't notice the barrel down there.
Don't fall over.
So where were you looking for inspiration, like sort of when you're opening this place up, and are there any people that have really been important to you in the field?
There were some places, I think.
Yeah.
Grady McDuff's in Maine, that was our first brew pub. I think it was our first brew pub experience.
Oh, no, okay.
And then, yeah, well, that's true. And then Ray McNeil's, I guess, really all. I thought his beers were fantastic.
So were you into beer before those places, or were those the places you went to and you were like, oh man, you know, beer's fun and interesting, and
I think
this could be your life, sort of.
Yeah.
Or was the first kick?
I started getting into it right in college. I had a roommate that went to international school in Belgium, and he introduced me to what we thought were good beers back then, which was just Stella and some other things, not really interesting, but kind of got into it back then. So I guess it's been a long, long time I've been interested in it. So.
Yeah.
I mean, the first Samuel Smith's I ever had, he and I had a bet, because it was, you know, it was like $3 a bottle or something in college. I lost the bet, and I had to buy it for him or something, and we tried it, and it was so syrupy and thick. Oh, we almost didn't drink it, you know?
Was it the Imperial Stout, or was it like an oatmeal stout?
It's just their oatmeal stout.
Yeah.
You know, back then, you know how things are.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah, it's sort of a...
Like Geary's in Maine,
yeah.
You know, that was so hoppy. And I still today don't know if it's changed or we've changed.
Yeah.
But it was like the hoppiest beer I ever had.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe they could put that much
yeah.
hops in.
And today it would probably be a run-of-the-mill pale ale.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, these days are the people that you're sort of, you know, you get excited about, like you'll maybe, seek out a bottle from someone or
local people that
yeah,
day and time you're having to be down in, you know, wherever or over wherever, you know.
I'm
sure
interested in what Terry's doing right now, the Wild Beers. I think he's doing a really good job with that.
Yeah.
You know, there's some fantastic. There's a lot of IPAs out there, but there's a few that I think, you know, are really exceptional.
Yours is a really terrific pine character to it. Is that like Columbus or Chinook or hops you add to the IPA? It really is like, it's almost to me like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, no, this is this wonderfully
like,
saturated.
Really, I mean, yeah, but like not in any sort of like offensive, but in this delicious sort of like, you know,
Amarillo
fall winter.
Simcoe.
Really? Delicious.
Yeah, Simcoe gives that big fruit. That's what
yeah.
I'm probably going to eat.
It can be pine. Yeah, it can definitely be piney too. I mean, I've had that big like orange juicy sort of thing from Simcoe in the past, but yeah, those seem to be the sort of the two modern. You know, everybody who does a great IPA, it's Amarillo and Simcoe.
So, how about like sort of any sort of brewing trends that are you excited about, or do you have your hopes on the industry turning in any direction? Or?
Well, I hope it keeps growing.
Yeah.
Still us against them in a way.
Yeah.
But for craft brewing, local brewing, I think that's important. I mean, I like our whole pub thing. I like not having television and table tents. And,
yeah.
You know, we always, from the beginning, we wanted to have a diverse clientele. That was right in our mission statement.
Mm.
Go out there and see. Father Patrick and Professor so-and-so.
And whoever works in the little store up the street or whatever.
You know, to see all those people there, young people and old people, that's great.
You guys are getting ready to do the big Halloween release too, right? That's a...
The pumpkin.
People get really excited about
that
one.
Yeah, we do.
So we just missed it, so what...
Next year it's going on October 1st. Fielding questions for 3 weeks. We usually ran it from the Halloween parade to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
but I'm going to release it earlier. People just, they start looking for them October 1st. That's just, so I'm going to do that. It's got a really great response.
Yeah. And you do it on nitrogen?
Yeah, and that's...
And that seems like, you know, just that perfect creamy, you know, smooth...
It whips it up.
Yeah.
And so, tell us a little bit about the sort of the recipe. What was your idea when you're putting this sort of pumpkin beer together?
Did you use actual pumpkins?
Yes, there's pumpkin in it. This pumpkin, there's pumpkin spices and an amber base. I think the nitrogen is really.
How do you do spices? Do you do add to the boil? Add a.
No,
add
they're
a,
all secondary.
All secondary, just like ground spices right into the.
And that's best. You can tweak things.
Yeah. So you start sort of low, and then if it needs more, just give it another ounce or two or whatever it takes on that scale.
I hope I didn't put too much in today. But, yeah, it's something I did two kegs of once, and then I did four, then I did six.
And now you're just going to, pretty soon just, it'll be a year round.
Now it's a whole batch. I'm not doing it year-round. I mean, it's, you can't mix up your lines or anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like root beer, you don't want to mix.
I helped out at a brew pub, Millie's Tavern in Manchester, and the brewer was telling me, I guess they do like a pumpkin pie spice on the rim.
Oh, okay.
And he was tasting his Imperial Stout, and he got really freaked out because he was tasting pumpkin pie spice, what's going on? And it turned out that like the bartender just like hadn't washed the rim well enough.
Right.
But I guess that sort of permeable spice, you just need a little bit on anything.
Exactly.
And it's over.
And so for the Hop Nouveau, you guys grow your own hops. You've got a hop yard here locally?
A lot of them are out here. We grow them right here. We have a trellis.
Okay.
Yeah. Side of the garage, a couple other spots. But we got 37 pounds this year.
Oh, wow. And then just all into that batch?
Yeah, the next day. We have a big party, staff party, called the Hop Drop. And there's prizes for the longest hops.
So all hops were grown within, 20 feet of the brew house?
One of our waitresses has some hops at her house, she brings.
Okay.
Is that all
basically, ingredients?
Do you use those for bittering and flavoring?
Yep, the whole thing.
The whole thing?
It's, they go whole into the kettle, and then I hop back, like I use the mash tun for hop back. It's not fun to clean up. If you're not used to or set up, these whole hops and boil. It's, I have to crawl in the kettle and scoop them out. But
the staff has fun, but you don't.
That's why you need an assistant around here. That's right.
But it's not like any other beer. That's the fun of it. You can really taste it. It has a different quality using wet hops.
Yeah.
And how many years ago did you put those? A few years on them.
Oh, the first one started.
Wow.
Years ago.
We planned them. So
12 years.
First year we just did it, just Steve and I and go home. And the next year we decided to do like the whole staff thing. So I think that was the
11th
staff.
Okay.
There's one.
Very nuclear.
Well, probably not that many hops the first year. Take a couple years to get established.
But they're all, most of them are just from the original five or six plants. So that's kind of cool.
And just sort of standard American-ish varieties, Cascades.
He has a lot of Cascade. This is BC Ken, Holler Tower.
Real mix.
Yeah, in fact, I wish I had more English. See, the first time we ever had a wet beer was in England.
Yeah, really?
We were out at Tem Brewery, and there's a kind of bed and breakfast brew pub in the middle of a hop field, or hop fields, and it was really neat. They had three beers, this, that, and the other.
And this one of Mike's, what
this
have?
Is the, this is a slightly sour Saison.
say that three times fast.
I enjoy alliterations.
Have you all done much of that sort of beer trips or like gone? Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Any sort of big dream trips that you all have?
I think we'd like to go back to Belgium someday. I mean, that's when we were in Belgium, we didn't know.
Did you go with New Belgium on one of their big trips? Or just
before New Belgium.
Okay.
This was really just an accident. We were on the way to France, I think. It's just the train stopped in Belgium. We thought we'd stay overnight in a hostel, but we stayed like 3 days.
Well,
because we were just like, what is this? We were coming from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Belgium for me was, you know, Amsterdam's, you know, sex and drugs.
Right. But
what gets me is chocolate and beer. You know, I'd be on the street in Belgium. I'd be an addict. And chocolate. So that was really much more exciting for us. We had a great time in Belgium. I took all these notes. Like,
yeah.
This beer tastes like horse sweat. This is before we even knew it.
Yeah.
So it was really neat.
Yeah.
We discovered it on our own. And then we just happened to get a job at New Belgium. It seemed to play right into it. Because we were so impressed with Belgium's beer. So I think we'd like to get back there sometime.
Well, are there any breweries over there that just sort of will,
you know,
get you really excited? Or
they all got us excited.
Yeah,
I mean,
just the whole culture. Yeah.
Orval
yeah.
was incredibly hoppy. I mean, I've never had such a hoppy version in the States.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, I don't, you know, I'd have to look at, we didn't know what we were drinking.
Sure.
We never even heard of any of those
things.
You weren't seeing names, being like, oh man, I don't know what I'm trying to do. You were seeing that, being like, okay, yeah.
We're in
like, give it a try.
There were some beers kind of this little like puppet theater bar. Nobody was there at the time. Went in and ordered these big bottles. Maybe
they
weren't
in front of
them. They were so sour, we could drink them, and we felt like we had to drink them. We bought them. And
yeah. We'll insult them if we don't. You
right.
Know?
And then there are these little containers of little sugar cubes on each table. And I thought, well, I'll just throw some of these in there. Did make it palatable, but then later on we learned that that's why it's on the table. It's like
you were assuming
beer.
It was tea or coffee.
Yeah.
Or
I thought it'd be like,
it was funny. And then in fact he wouldn't, it was a bottle because he wouldn't, he told me he didn't have a corkscrew. And I'm like, so I whipped out my Swiss Army knife and like bring it out.
He
didn't want to sell it to us.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I have no corkscrew. He's like, it's a bar, I don't have a corkscrew.
Do you think he just assumed, oh, here's a couple of young Americans,
oh, yeah.
and they're going to they're gonna insult me and say
right.
sour?
Right, they can't appreciate that. That's an American palate.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. You'd think he'd want to,
unload
it or educate.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a little resistant to bringing it to us. So. But yeah, I didn't know the Belgians were so into puppets either. It was a bizarre country.
I'd never heard that either.
It's called the Toon Theater. It's a puppet. It's down an alley. You go down an alley. You go in and there's a bar and a puppet theater.
Like for adults, I mean, not dogs.
Were you all in Brussels or?
Yeah. That was fun. But we did a trip to Germany. We did a trip to England.
But that's the, Belgium is really the one that stuck with you the most, inspired you the most?
I'd say early on.
I mean, yeah.
And then just falling into New Belgium just reinforced all that.
Yeah.
Kind of made sense. You know, we had already done the wild beer by that time.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It seemed to be in place when we were there.
Just load up the family and
bring all the kids to Belgium with you.
Get them started early.
Scotland's on the books too.
Yeah, it's a great.
It's just a beautiful country.
Yeah, it's awesome. And if you, I don't know if you're into trains at all, but it's absolutely the most beautiful train lines in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful trip. And you know, it's hard to find anything over 4.5% alcohol.
Right.
Up there, it's great. It's just you sit in for a couple hours, and it's just. It's wonderful. And go when there's terrible weather. Like I went in March, it was great. You have a great excuse to be in the pub for hours, but getting out hiking along the coast and that, just, and then the people
I did have haggis.
But
yeah, we went to Heather's. Heather has McNabb, and they have the clan burial ground.
Mm.
Killin, what, north of Edinburgh?
It's like sort of lowland, low highland.
But it's a little town, and, but it's got all these things. It's got like a mini Stonehenge. It's got the world's largest indoor grapevine.
Yeah.
It's got a castle.
It's got like these stones from St. Philan, who is like an 8th century
healer.
Yeah.
Like the one shaped like a kidney. You know, you put it on the kidney, and the one shaped like the heart. He did all this stuff for the healing stones. And then in the middle is there's a river. And in the middle is, I can't remember the name, official name of it, it's called Yellow Eye. There's all the 13 clan chief effigies. In the ground.
Yeah.
They're pretty wild. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you see all those those old the old standing stones and everything. I don't care who you are when you're there. It's like it's a little eerie. You know, feel that. You know, you're like, no, I don't care. Like, you can't really deny that there's some weird stuff going on.
Yeah. That's the thing you miss in America. It's like growing up, there's some little house in the center of our town. There's one. 1822 or something. And my parents took me to France. It's like, oh, there's some old stone church from 1100. And you're just like, oh, who cares about that stupid house? Like, what, in America, we just don't have much history.
And in Germany, it's 1128 or
something.
Yeah. You're like, it's like the town.
Right? Yeah. People don't even care. That's not, it's
bizarre. And then, see, we have our house is 1780. It's actually older than the Governor Snyder. So I've fallen in love with old architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So to go over there in Germany, we went to a lot of, they have these kind of Williamsburg type museums, except to drink, walk around and drink. But houses, this period, 1300s, 1400s, this is the farmhouses.
Yeah.
And we learned a lot about our places, because we've been trying to restore some of the stuff. And it's funny, I just had a visit from a guy from New Belgium. He's taking his required 6-week vacation. And he was in Canada and he stopped down. And, he's from out west, and then he hears this is 1860.
Yeah.
And for him, that's baffling because there's no.
There's nothing at all.
It's all 1860s or.
Senor,
he looks at our places again,
being
older.
Yeah,
it's just, it is, it's kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah, and the pub is just beautiful with those big old fireplaces. And
yeah, that's the original, that was the kitchen.
Yeah.
But the crane is
the
original.
Hearth, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, and they you always see in pictures one giant fire.
Yeah.
But what they do is they make 3 or 4 little fires, and those are your burners. And you had a trammel. Raise and lower your pot, and that's your low, medium, high. Low, medium, high.
Yeah. High being
sounds
low
like you also
low,
just like start doing like colonial cooking, like that would be like a bit of an expert on that subject.
It's cool. It's,
yeah.
I really like that kind of thing.
Have you, do you all do like sort of beer dinners and that kind of stuff? Or?
We don't, that's, I did for a while. I was really kind
of
hot on that. And honestly, I just,
a lot of work.
We don't have the facility.
Yeah.
I mean,
you gotta run from room to room, hey folks in here, and
kids, and pace, I just been pushed aside for years.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done any historical beers? Have you ever tried to do whatever sort of beer would have been brewed around this area when it was built? Or?
Not exactly. I mean, I did the porter with some molasses, because that's traditional.
Delicious.
cream ale, but no, I haven't gone around and gathered any grains.
Or research, sort of, if there were any breweries in the area, 200 years ago, or that sort of thing.
Well, we should search the area when we came here. So of course, the whole dog story, I don't know if you know the dog in the wheel.
No.
Well, there was a brewery down at the end of Mill Street that originally was a distillery, then became a brewery. But when it was a distillery, they used to as they put it in the history of Snyder County, gather the stray dogs that had been molesting the local sheep.
Oh, God.
I love that word. And put them in this 15-foot wheel. And this running of the dogs would pump the water from the distillery.
Oh, so it's like a vertical...
Just like a gerbil wheel.
Yeah.
Yep. And so that's where the whole dog and the wheel came from. We thought it was a really neat story.
Yeah.
That could be your masterpiece.
You know, you could do the dog with the wheel, you know, deer here. That could be your base or whatever.
But let's have the dog run.
Yeah, you have the dog run and, like, right. Power the brew house or something. And, like,
yeah, at the end of the store, you know, like, we have an
old t-shirt.
Says, we use no dogs in our brewing or something, but I'd have to take that off. But, yeah, that's, that was kind of neat. That gave us something to connect with here.
Yeah.
The governor was, we checked out the governor, too, and I didn't want to, if he was a teetotaler or something.
Sure.
You know, there's always ghost stories. And
yeah.
This history, and but fortunately,
to work out your karma there.
He owned a distillery, and he was a cool guy. He introduced coffee to the area. No one knew what coffee was.
Yeah.
There's this story about him giving coffee beans to this lady, and then she came back.
Invigorated.
This is the worst stuff I've ever eaten. He's like, you're not supposed to eat it. Or, like, he didn't do it. He didn't grind it and steam it like you're supposed to.
Broke my tooth.
Yeah. This is terrible. You call yourself a governor. But he was good. It seemed like he was down with the, you know, hooch and stuff. So we felt good about it. And then we were worried about the Episcopal Church right here, because they're within 300 feet.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of you all have all kinds of crazy laws about
church
alcohol up here.
And,
so.
And that really killed. I remember when we were looking for sites, that killed so many of our sites.
Yeah.
So did you have to fight town hall on this, or?
Well, no. I mean, the church was the first thing I was worried about. Now it's only if they protest.
Okay. If they protest, it's like automatic, almost. Just
right.
Sort of, yeah.
Well, I was in the local library, and there was the Episcopalian cookbook, you know, like on the, you could purchase for, raise money for. And I opened it up, and the first recipe was a homebrew recipe.
So you knew you
were and I was like, we're in! You know? And we wrote Father Bob, and I talked to Father Bob about what we're trying to do, and he was really supportive, and he had no problem with that. Now, as far as the town goes, apparently, and I never knew it until later, but there were certain meetings about us coming to town and, you know, what kind of presence, you know, and the effect it would have on the morale or moral of the whole area.
Think about the children.
Yeah, it was really, someone was telling me about it, I'm like, really? They had meetings about you guys. Because, you know, a brewery's coming to town.
Yeah.
It's sort of that old German Puritan stuff.
Well, I would be very different if you were some giant production brewery that could be belching smoke and, you know.
Yeah, and that's the vision people have,
yeah.
I think. But no one said, come in and present the idea. You know, I could have come in and talked to them.
Yeah.
We had to go and get a variance for parking, so I had to explain what we were doing and stuff.
But
I didn't
things have worked out, and
for
the hour that we were sitting in the pub, there was a constant stream of people coming in with growlers to be filled.
And mid-afternoon on a Saturday, when a lot of restaurants or brew pubs are pretty much ghost towns.
It seems like, every third customer had a growler in their hands.
So. Yeah, actually, Melody said she filled a lot of growlers, so that's more than usual. But it's amazing that keeps going.
Yeah.
I mean, I still buy pallets and pallets of growlers. People are like, I have 11 growlers at home. I forgot it again. but now people, you know, they'll take out two or three. You almost have to go to gallons or something. It's just, you know, it's another thing. I don't have any place to put stuff. There's stuff stored under the stairs.
Yeah.
Behind your table, there's stuff stored. You probably didn't know it.
No, I saw it.
We're actually looking at
that
door.
I was like, hey, I want this, right?
There's no place to put it.
There are the tea lights. And,
it's not unusual. I'll be like, here, hold this.
Put it up the chimney or something like that.
And so that keeps you busy brewing. So, like, how often are you brewing? What kind of schedule are you on?
kind of probably averages out to twice a week, I guess.
Yes.
I'll go two brews 1 week, and then I'll do celery and one brew, and then I'll do two brews.
Yeah.
You have to, like, I'm doing transfers today.
Yeah.
Transferring, and then you have to clean these fermenters. First, you have to empty the conditioning tanks, clean the conditioning tanks. You know, it's a wrap.
It takes time.
It's pushing that boulder up the hill.
And all the beer gets kegged, I assume?
Yeah, everything gets kegged. I don't filter, I rack three times from here to the conditioning room.
And then to the keg? Oh, no.
You can just poke your head.
So we were just talking about the, and what is the, it's the Fest Beer, is it, it had some more elaborate name, didn't it?
Well, it's Market Street Fest. I mean,
which is the road that the brew pub is on.
Right, and we have a big festival, Market Street Festival. And I release it on that date, so. But, I've never been able to make my mind a good Oktoberfest.
You know? Do you have one that's like that you've had?
And I just I can't do all the decocts.
Is that something you'd want to do? Like, would you ever?
It's really tricky. I mean, if I had all the equipment and stuff, but I seem to make a decent pilsner and even a Hefeweizen without doing all that.
Yeah, he's being modest. So,
totally, the pilsner and the fest beer.
No, and I actually
just
aged
this
5 months old before I even released it. Yeah. I actually made
like a Marzen, yeah.
Like a Marzen. I made it like April or something. And then my album's gonna let it sit. And that helped.
Yeah, so many are sort of on the cloying side, you know. And
just like that deep maltiness, being sweet or without being.
Well, I think people use a lot of caramel malts as a substitute for what you can't get through a long boil or decoction and stuff.
Yeah.
That maltiness. It's just not quite right. It's malty, but it's not the right type of malt.
Exactly,
it's sweet, but it's not the right
type. Did you use a lot of Vienna, Munich, that sort of thing?
I do. I have a terrible time in Munich. It always tastes really grainy.
Yeah.
And I get that a lot of
in a bad kind of way. It's like a husky kind of.
And I get that a lot of American. So I go more with a I try to do a long boil, and I use some Munich, and I use some of their, what is it called, melanoidin.
Yeah, or aromatic.
But
And then just sort of a regular Pilsner base.
Yeah, when I'm done on Munich, it's awful.
Yeah.
No, it's been okay in my higher alcohol beers for some reason.
Really?
Like my Doppelbock.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
Again, it comes down to your brewery.
Yeah.
You have to find what works.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line.
Do you have a yeast that you like, a lager yeast that you always do, like a standard lager yeast you use, or?
Yeah, I use this kind of, for my pilsner I use a kind of Southern German lager yeast, and then I've been using Andex from BSI for my Maibock, my malty beers. I used to use the Southern German lager strain, but I switched to the Andex. Those guys are so excited about it. It is not.
I think was Terry talking about the Andex strain? Somebody was yesterday.
I think it was Mike.
It was.
I could be wrong though.
Although I think he was talking with the Andex.
It was a lot
the Weiss. I think he was talking about the Weiss strain from them.
Oh, maybe.
And not the lager strain from the same brewery.
Yeah, because he was so excited.
For his Dunkelweiss.
Right.
Said,
exactly.
Yeah.
Which he was really happy with.
Okay.
And his wife too. Completely.
No, it was. I think it was the beer. Maybe his winter seasonal last year or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. His seasonal this year was the saison.
Yeah,
he had borrowed yeast from Terry, and his yeast was DuPont with some Brett Clausenei in it. And he did like a sassafras.
Sassafras, ginger, and coriander. It was very nice. I mean, it was the first couple of sips were too sort of herbal, spicy, but then after you,
it's one of those beers where
your palate
gets
used to it.
Beer, but then you sort of acclimate a little bit, so it backs off some.
Yeah.
Huh. Usually, the one question that we like to cover is sort of like, do you have an opinion on sort of the beer rating websites, one way or the other?
They're generally very nice to you. You know?
Yeah, when you're at the top or something, then, you know, they're great.
Yeah.
It's like anything, you know. Yeah. Whenever you have a rating system or a contest, you know, there's going to be winners and losers. And if you're on the bad list or you don't win, you don't like it. You know, so you have to take it with a grain of salt to a point.
But that's not something you've ever really attempted to, I go on there once a day and somebody gave me a bad rating, so I'm going to change my beer or I'm going to beat myself up about it.
Because people usually don't know what they're talking about. We had some guys go, I had paid all this money for this raspberry beer and I expected a nice beer with some raspberry flavoring, but it was disgusting because it all was raspberry and he gave me like a 1 or something.
Yeah.
And you know, it's our friend Bois. He obviously never had a Belgian.
Yeah.
Never had a Belgian beer, so I don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I think only one time someone, like we talked to somebody, they were complaining about something that had nothing to do with us or our beer. It's just, really, it was.
Yeah. So you really do you try to brew just like what you want to brew?
Yeah, that's the key.
And then, I mean, if people are drinking it, you brew it again, that kind
Spoon
of thing.
The rest.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's
well,
the most that's the successful people at anything do what they're passionate about, do what they're
I feel doing. Like, you know what a good beer is.
Yeah.
And
you've been brewing longer than most people
have
drinking.
I've taken popular beers off and never brewed them again.
Really?
I took our ESB, our Old Trail ESB off years ago. And
you just weren't happy with it?
No. I was tired of it. And even Michael Jackson told me to keep making it. I still took it off.
But what is he now,
right? Yeah. But yeah, there's certain things I'm interested in, and I think that's, you know, people have come around. If you cater to what people wanted, I'd be brewing light beer.
Yeah, Bud Light. I mean,
really, that's what most of the public drinks.
Yeah.
It's 80% of the public. So, yeah, you have to do what you're interested in.
So that's what keeps it sort of fresh and exciting for you, is the sort of, you know, even if there's just a demand for it, if you're not feeling the passion for it or something like that, it's time for the next thing.
I think so, yeah. And people don't always like that.
So do you view your brewing as an art, a craft, or a science? I mean, it certainly sounds like you're, you know.
D, right? All of the above.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, Jeff Liebisch used to say it's an art and science. It's a craft, too. It's all of those things. I mean, for me, what artisan means is, because I consider us an artisan brewery, is being hands-on.
Yeah.
Using your senses, smelling,
seeing,
looking, and not being disconnected from the process.
Yeah.
That's why I do most of the stuff. I inspect every can myself with a flashlight, every single one.
Wow.
So it's just about being involved in something.
Yeah.
But honestly, like right now, I want to hunt mushrooms. That's all I'm interested in.
We were talking about that yesterday.
Yeah. I'm like, get so ready to like do the mycological. There's a local mycological society, and just like that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I'm just, yeah.
Whatever I can do here, so I can get out in the woods right now,
yeah.
That's what I'm hot on. And
are you a hunter or like the what are the outdoors sort of?
I'm a hunter.
Yeah, just mushrooms. Just mushrooms. Okay.
Take that, you lousy shiitake.
Yeah. Death cat.
Well, I just
yeah.
Me and my girlfriend started keeping bees this year, and it's just this wonderful, very rewarding, very simple thing to do. You know, it was like very sort of easy. You know, like
until the bees die.
Which was a very
I think
or whatever. But you know, it's the
people who are really passionate about beer are often passionate about all sorts of other things. I mean, between us, we make bread, we make cheese, we make sauerkraut, we make.
Yeah, I think that's like a personality thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I admire people who are still totally into brewing, and I do sometimes get excited.
Yeah.
Honestly.
After this long.
You know, you get other interests. I never thought I'd be out in the woods. Like, I'm 40 something, and I just have a new hobby.
Yeah.
And it's opened up a whole world to me. You know, and talkies.
Well, is there somebody showed you the way, or you just had a book, a field guide?
You know, stumble into things.
Yeah.
Someone was telling me about morels.
Yeah.
And, When I saw my first one, I thought a fairy had appeared before me. It, really, it was like
that
one of the most exciting moments I've had in years.
Yeah.
But, and then it just blossomed. And the neat thing is, you know, because they have a relationship with trees, you know, now I'm learning from trees. I'm learning.
Yeah.
It branches out. And
I bet you all have some great maple syrup here, right? And
what's that?
Do you have some maple syrup in the sort of this part of Pennsylvania, or
no,
not really.
I don't care about it.
Okay.
I'm from Maine,
sort of
so
further up. Yeah.
I used to make maple syrup as a kid. So
okay.
I know all about it.
Yeah.
I know over at Chambers Creek in State College,
okay,
some maple syrup at the camp. But I don't really know.
Well, where are you going? Where are you on your sort of walkabouts around here?
You don't ask someone who hunts mushrooms where they look. That's like
what's
okay.
No, I've gone. There's a lot.
Like
of,
how big is your sort of radius of a?
It's probably a 60-mile radius. Yep.
And did you bring the kids out, or is this a sort of a sort
I
of?
I bring the kids out, but
sure
I buys. I do my best hunting with Heather and I. You know, and I'm doing some trail running.
Okay.
Running, I picked up running a few years ago.
How are your ankles doing?
So,
I love trail running, but I always crack my ankles.
My feet are killing me.
Your feet? Okay.
You see, all my medals are not really medals.
Yeah. But you don't do the sort of those crazy ultra running nonsense.
No. But I have found some great mushroom running.
Yeah.
So I'm trying
cover
to
cover a lot more grounds and walking slowly.
It's amazing. It doesn't, you know, when you try to look around when you're trail running, you've got to be careful.
Oh, yeah. That was my problem, is that, like, a lot of times I get out in the woods, and I was just putting my foot in the wrong place,
right,
and just, I was constantly injuring myself, so. Just,
you have to be careful.
Yeah, I think I have to just a little more focus on the actual trail.
ever think of opening mushrooms in a beer?
Yes, I have.
Have you done it, or have you just sort of considered it?
Can we keep this off the record?
Yeah, hit stop.
Yeah, so thanks for having us, and for giving us a little bit of this 8-year-old Russian Imperial Stout. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, it was just tremendous.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
Thank you guys for
coming. Yeah, and we'll probably be up here at some point again and try some more beers.
Yeah, looking forward to that trip.
Thank you.
Well,